This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
20 till 4, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. 15 minutes from now, I'm going to have your chance to win a free gift card to Hog Wild Barbecue. It'd be pretty rude of me to make you pay for it. So, of course, I think it kind of goes without saying it's going to be free. Be listening for your chance to win. We're going to do it every Thursday before a KU home football game. They do open their season against SEMO, so we got to get this underway. Our Kansas football 2017 prop bets. Derek has prepared a list of prop bets that he conjured up with that very big brain of his, and he's going to share them with us now.
Well, thank you for the compliment, I think. Let's just start off where we started yesterday. How many people are going to come to the game? We'll set the over-under. I'll make it hard on you because I knew what you predicted yesterday, so I'm going to set it exactly at 40,000.
Why do you do that? Stop changing the goalposts.
Because like
you set the over-under at 38.
No, I changed.
You just want me to
the
be
lines
wrong.
The lines changed.
All you're doing is wanting me to be wrong.
No, people kept betting on the over, so the lines went up.
Oh, yeah, what people?
There were plenty of people. I can't name them all.
Fine. Then I'll invite an extra buddy so that there'll be 40,001. So I'll give my, I'll handicap it for myself, and I will say that 40,001 persons show up to the game on Saturday. I really do. I think it's going to be a big turnout. When you just look at the history, KU hasn't had 30,000 in almost 2 years. Week two of the David Beatty era. Last year of Charlie Weiss, he was regularly bringing in 30,000 plus for every home game. That was after how many years of abysmal football? 2 years of Turner Gill, 2 years of Charlie Weiss, and the last year of Mark Mangino. They were still bringing in 30,000 every game. The first year of Charlie Weiss, even after three really bad seasons of football, they were still bringing in 40,000 a game for all but one. When you combine the buzz around the program, the fact that the Orange Bowl team is going to be honored, Mark Mangino is going to be back, it's a 6 o'clock kickoff. I like it, man. I really do think people are going to show up over on 40,000 fans on Saturday.
All right, let's move on to the first drive for Kansas in that very first game. 1.5 is the over-under for amount of bubble screens that KU puts together on that first drive.
1.5
Yes.
Bubble screens. I'm not football savvy enough to the point of I can't...
Just want to make it screens?
Yeah, because I'm not going to sit here and be like, was that a bubble screen?
All right, let's just do screens. Halfback screens, receiver screens, tight end screens.
Under. Under, okay. I think one screen. You can't go two. How often do you see, like, two screens on one drive?
Like, every quarter of Kansas football?
Well, I think you're confusing David Beatty with Andy Reid. And remember, this is Doug Meacham's offense now. We don't know Doug Meacham's offense. I'm not going to assume that a guy of his caliber who runs the air raid is going to run two bubble screens. They got a quarterback who can sling it now. Remember that. Peyton Bender is not Ryan Willis. Peyton Bender is not Montel Cozart. He can throw the ball down the field. You're going to utilize that arm. Under. And that's an easy one.
All right, let's take it into halftime. The Orange Bowl team going to be honored. Aqib Talib going to be there, getting in the Hall of Fame, the Ring of Honor. Is he going to, assuming that he speaks to the crowd, is he going to provide us with some type of nice soundbite?
I felt like Deion. I felt like Deion right there.
I'm going to say no, he will not. Because, and this is a technicality, I don't even think he'll speak.
That could be true.
They got a lot to get to in that halftime, man. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be an extended? I mean, think about everything they have to do. Maybe he'll say a couple quick words. What constitutes a soundbite? This is objective. Like, he just talks.
I'll be the judge.
If he just speaks, is that a soundbite, or does it have to be noteworthy?
It has to be something either noteworthy or kooky, Aqib Talib-y.
No, I think he's going to... If he says anything, he'll just be like, thanks to the fans, Rock Chalk, baby. Something like that. I felt like Deion! That's greatness.
All right, assuming they win the game, which direction will Coach Beatty go to start his post game? Assuming they win again. One, really proud of the team. Something to deal with that. Second option, I thought we played well. Third option, still got a lot to work on. Option four, It's hard to win games, and I'll take any write-in options as well.
I wish I would have sifted through some of last year's post-game interviews to get to the bottom of this. Let me just think this out. I'm putting myself in his shoes. You just won 35-10. You know, what'd you think of the game? Well, I'm really proud of the team. It's either really proud of the team or a lot to work on.
Well, which one?
I think it's a combination of both. Like, I think they're going
to
come in
successive
order.
No, one has to come first, though.
That's true.
Comes before the other.
What's more likely? We still got a lot to work on, but I'm really proud of the team. I'm really proud of these guys, but we still got a lot to work on. I think he's going to be really proud of the team.
Okay.
I think he's going to be really proud of the team. And then that's my first part of my answer. And then my second part of the answer is that they still have a lot to work on.
Okay, so you're going for 1-2. Are there any other like write-ins that you think could be a possible candidate?
I'll tell you what, man. I don't know why I just tried to go John Gruden. I'll tell you what. Man, that SEMO team, they're a pretty good ball club. you challenged me to work on my Gruden, and I think that was a lot better
than yesterday.
I kind of like that SEMO team, man. They're such a bad team. They're almost kind of a good team. I think he will say something along the lines of, "That's a really good ball. I'll tell you what, that's a really good ball club we just played over there. That SEMO team, they're a good team. I don't care what anybody says. That's something along those lines. He's going to say that, you know, SEMO's really good.
All right, let's move on to some season goals, some season over-unders here. The Vegas over-under is 2.5, but I think...
Still?
Yes, but I think we're both would go over on that.
I would take 2.5. I would take over on 2.5 in a heartbeat.
Right. So I'm going to set it at 3.5.
Well, I think they beat SEMO. I think they beat Central Michigan. Ohio's a toughie, man. They're a team who's constantly challenging for conference championships, and now you got to go play them at your place. KU should have had a chance to beat them last year. Like, they just should have. And that was with Montel Cozart at quarterback. I guess I can skip over that game. Do I think that they're going to win a Big 12 game? Yes, I do. I think they could beat Iowa State. I think they could beat Texas Tech. Now, I don't know. We'll see what we get when Texas Tech. A lot of people seem to be down on them. I'm going to go over. I think they win 4 games. That's kind of been the number I've been eyeing all year long. I don't go down and crunch the schedule and pick wins and losses. I think that can be somewhat of a tiresome exercise. I just go off feels, you know? Which seems to suit me pretty well. Generally, I can feel things out pretty well. I'm going to go with the over on 3.5. I'm going to pick this team to win 4 games this year.
Half a road win. Just got to get one road win. We know that's been troublesome. They do have Ohio on the road. That's probably a pretty winnable road game.
You say that now. Well, what other road games do they got? They got to play at Iowa State. They could win that game. That's really the only other winnable road game because you got to play at Texas. I don't see it happening. You got to play at TCU. Don't see it happening. You got to play at Oklahoma State. So you either got to win at Iowa State or you got to win at Ohio. But let's just say if I say they lose both those games, it's pretty tough to get to 4 wins. So I have to take the over. I have to, because if they don't, then I'm wrong on both. So don't hedge your bets. Stick to them. I'm going over on 3.5 wins. I'm going over on 0.5 road wins.
Okay, how many times are Kansas fans going to storm the field at Memorial Stadium? Setting the over-under at 1.5. Now, this gets interesting because it's not just about how many home games they're going to win. You have to figure out if you think they'll storm the field.
Dude, that number's way too high.
They stormed twice last year.
That number's way too high. Did they storm after the
Rhode
Island game?
They stormed after Rhode Island.
Forgot about that. No, that wasn't a real field storming.
I mean, what defines a field storm? It wasn't a good one, but it was.
Back in the 2000s, like the early 2000s, KU stormed the court when KU beat like Texas at Allen Fieldhouse. It was like 30 dudes. That's not a court storming. That's some rambunctious fans
out of their mind.
That number's still way too high. I think the number is going to be 0 field stormings this year. I would set the over-under at 0.5. I think you're going to feel really dumb on this one.
I think
it's a new era of Kansas football, dude. They're not just going to storm the field every time they win a game.
Yeah, but...
No, no.
Okay.
That number's way too high. It should be at 0.5. I think most people would still take the under. If you're giving me 1.5, I'd take the under with ease.
1.5 quarterbacks start a game this season.
I'm going to go under. I really think that Peyton Bender is going to be that guy at quarterback, and that's really what you're asking me. Like, we can turn that question into an over-under form, but what you're really asking me is, do I think Peyton Bender is going to be good enough to retain that starting job all season long? I do. So I think it's one. Now, if somebody could get injured, if Bender gets injured and has to sit out, that's fine. So I'm not only am I betting on Peyton Bender as a quarterback, I'm betting on his health, and I'm betting he's going to stay healthy enough to stay on the field.
All right, let's extend this one out. Quarterbacks that just play in general.
Oh, okay.
2.5. You're going to get 2 no matter what in the opening
game.
Yeah,
we haven't talked much about Tyreek Starks. Yeah, the opening game, I think you're going to get 2, but...
I mean, does Tyreek Starks get mop-up duty?
Well, it sounds as though Carter Stanley has a hand injury. That's what Tom Keegan of the Lawrence Journal World wrote earlier this week. We don't know to what extent he has a hand injury. We don't know how long it's going to keep him sidelined, if he's going to be even available this weekend. So let's just say he's not. I'm not convinced that we're going to see 2 quarterbacks play this Saturday. Like, you're not putting 2 quarterbacks in if you're up 35-10. Like, if you're up 35-10 in the fourth quarter, Peyton Bender's probably staying in there. Like, that's not enough of a cushion. It is, but it's more of a respect thing, like having respect for your opponent. You're not going to just throw your second string in there because you think you've put this team away. If it's still conceivable for them to come back, you're not putting your backup in. So I'm going under on that one as well, because I don't think we see one in week one. I mean, hopefully we do. Hopefully they go out there and beat them by 50. I'm just not convinced it's going to happen. I think they win by 30. I don't know if that's enough to warrant putting your backup in. And if it's not, then you're not going to see it in week one. Then which games are you? So I'm going to go under. I think we see 2 quarterbacks play this year, but I don't think it's going to be in week one.
Will KU complete a Hail Mary this year? Over-under would be at 0.5.
I'm going to go under. I would bet the under on every team. Just play the odds there.
You'll win most of them.
Yep.
Will we see a Kansas quarterback throw for 2,400 yards? So 200 a game.
That is very doable, man. 200 yards a game in the air raid?
It is, but...
If you didn't hit... And here's the problem. When we get into these discussions of Kansas quarterbacks... It's borderline idiotic. And I'm just not people who think it, just the thought process. And I do it naturally too. I think everybody does. It's the same thing when you look at quarterbacks from specific colleges or specific schemes and you say no quarterback from USC has ever makes it in the NFL. Well, why are you comparing quarterbacks in 2017 to quarterbacks who came out of USC 30 years ago? You think they're undergoing the exact same circumstances? It's coincidence, man. Like, not everything has a correlation. Sometimes things just happen and we can't explain it. USC's had a bad run of quarterbacks trying to make it in the league. Same thing with this. Are we going to hold it against Peyton Bender, who we haven't seen yet, so it makes it tough to do? But you're not going to hold what Dane Crist and Jordan Webb and Jake Heaps and Montel Cozart and Ryan Willis did against Peyton Bender. What do any of those guys have to do with Peyton Bender? He's got a different head coach than most of them. He's got a different offensive coordinator than all of them. He's got more weapons than all of them. He's got more experience in the air raid offense than all of them. What does Peyton Bender have to do with any of those guys? So yes, you're right in assuming that, hey, we haven't seen it in a while, so maybe it would be risky to assume that it's going to happen this year. Peyton Bender should be better than all of those guys. Peyton Bender should be more experienced than all of those guys. So while it would come as a shock to the system to be like, oh my gosh, we have a good quarterback, it shouldn't come as a shock because that's what you should do in the air raid. I'm going over 2,400, and I don't think it should be much of a surprise.
Let's move on to the defense. Mike Lee, we know, huge hitter. How many guys does he either knock out of the game or get injured over the course of the season? 2.5.
Last year, 2?
I believe so.
It was Dede Westbrook, and then...
They didn't play a ton at the very start of the season.
Well, it was K-State. He knocked somebody out of the K-State game, right?
He almost knocked somebody out of the Texas Tech game, or did he? I know he laid the lumber on somebody on a screen pass.
I'm going to go under. Like, he's going to lay some wood. Like, that's just what he does. I'm going to go 2 guys. What constitutes, extended period of time laying on the ground?
Yeah, basically you miss some time in the game. Like, not just like a play, but...
I'm going to go two. I'm gonna say two. He gets the under there.
All right, final one. Dorrance Armstrong, preseason Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. He had 10 sacks last season. Does he do better than that? Your over-under for sacks is 10.5.
Now, this one is interesting because of the fact that he's going to get more attention. But then you think about the fact that he's was getting more attention at the end of last year, too, right? Like, at that point in the season, he was one of the best players in the Big 12 on the defensive side of the ball. Over under 10.5 sacks, I think there's going to be more guys getting after it, too. He's going to get more attention. Maybe Daniel Wise gets a few more. Maybe Josh Ahambe. Maybe Isaiah Bean. Maybe some of these guys are getting in on the action. With that being said, he is a college football player. He is young. He's in the prime of his life. He should be getting stronger, faster, bigger, better, more knowledgeable. It would be disappointing if he took a step back in the sack department, don't you think?
Well, I could see a situation where he's 8 or 9 sacks, but it's a better season just because of all the extra attention.
I could too. But I still think he's good enough to do it. Like, that, at the end of the day, how talented do you think he is? And if he is as talented as we all think he is, which is elite upside, elite athleticism, then you just find a way to be productive. And you find a way to do that, and I think that's what Dorrance Armstrong is going to do. I'm going to say over. I'm going to say 12 sacks in 2017 for Dorrance Armstrong. Is that the last one?
Yep, that's it.
That's our over-under section. Place your bets now. Do it legally. It's 356 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. 1 hour down, 2 to go. We'll keep the KU football conversation going with the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. He joins us in studio next. 4 o'clock hour here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We're going to keep the Kansas football conversation going all day long, all week long. Opening their season against SEMO on Saturday at 6 o'clock, which means my next guest, I'm sure, is chomping at the bit to get back in front of the microphone for a KU broadcast. The voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, joins me now. How are you, man?
Doing great, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
Excited?
Very much so. More about just what this season could include and where we could be heading trajectory-wise for the indefinite future of this program. I mean, I think this is the transitional season for David Beatty and KU football, much like 2003 was for Mark Mangino when you went from being a 2-10 team to suddenly going to the Tangerine Bowl as a 6-win team. And I'm not sitting here trying to predict bowl games or anything like that today, but I do think we're going to see a similar type of leap into contention in every game where you're contending, competing to win, but also contending for perhaps bowl eligibility. And so that's really exciting. And obviously with the Orange Bowl crew coming back and everything that's tied to that reunion, both on Friday night with some of the festivities and throughout the day Saturday, Akib, Anthony, Mark Mangino going up in the Hall of Fame, and those first two going in the Ring of Honor, so special. But to me, what does it say about this program, this campus, this athletic department, and the camaraderie amongst the guys and the love for their head coach, that 90% of the Orange Bowl roster is expected back. 90%.
That's incredible.
Some of these guys are coming from all points
and
corners.
And that was a big team.
Of the country. Oh, yeah.
When you think about the roster size then compared to now.
Absolutely. Sadly, Kerry Meyer has a previous commitment. He can't be there.
Oh, man.
And I just talked to Coach Mangino earlier today, and I was asking him the question, of all the players that embodied your mentality on the field, in the same way that they say a point guard in basketball is the extension of the head coach,
right,
who was the extension of Mark Mangino? Because remember when he used to talk about the toughness mentality?
Yeah.
It would almost come out of his mouth as mentality. And I don't know if that was intentional or not. I kind of called him on it in the interview. I said, you know, you used to say mentality. Who are the guys that had the Mark Mangino mentality? And he rattled off 3 or 4 names. But when he got to the end of it, he said, you know, the guy that might have been most important in the whole thing, not just the Orange Bowl season, but his entire tenure, was Kerry Meyer. And he said that because, in his eyes, Kerry could have played quarterback for, to quote him, 50, 60, or 70 other D1 teams, and yet he humbly accepted a role different than what he signed up for, took on a position that was not what he dreamed of playing or performing at Kansas. And he freaking rocked it.
Right.
I mean,
one of the best in program history.
One of the most prolific pass catchers we've ever seen. And Coach Mangino said when he did that, when he showed that, you know, the overall team outlook was more important than any individual ambition or goal, then everybody was falling in line behind that guy and wanted to buy in and do whatever it took to give to the greater good as well. So I thought that was really interesting, and it's kind of sad that he's the one main guy we won't have there, right. But everybody else is coming back. But for all those reasons, I'm jacked for Saturday and can't wait for it to get here.
Well, you talk about buying in, and that's something that's clearly happening right now, both with the players, with the assistant coaches, and the fan base. Like, if you were to just describe to somebody who has no knowledge of what's going on with KU football, and you told them, yeah, they won two games last year, and people are chomping at the bit to watch them play again, they'd say, really? Two games? And people are excited? But that's what's happening, and you have to give all of that credit, or at least a large majority of it, to David Beatty for being able to sell everybody on what he's doing at Kansas.
No doubt. No doubt. He's such a great football salesman. He makes everybody feel important, appreciated, excited, a part of it. I think doing those Hawk Talks with him a year ago, most of which came after a Saturday defeat, it was never a beatdown going in there because he always had this infectious, contagious energy and optimism about him. And he wasn't selling sunshine and rainbows. He would point to real tangible things that you could hang your hopes on. But a lot of coaches would have been more downtrodden and just, oh gosh, we got to do another one of these again. That wasn't him. And now he's got something really to sell.
That's
going to
be tough, by the way.
Oh, like, it is.
To maintain that level of enthusiasm and optimism externally when behind closed doors, that's probably what he is thinking. Like, what do I have to do to get this thing turned around?
And some of that's a credit to being an eternal optimist, but some of that is he saw behind closed doors that there were reasons to believe. Stuff that we weren't seeing materialize just yet in the win column, but he was seeing it on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I use the analogy a lot that, you know, if you have a big high water moment like that win over Texas, it's kind of like hitting that approach shot on a par three in golf where you put it within 5 feet. You still got to go out there and make the putt. Well, they backed it up and starting to make that putt by having a great recruiting class for 2016. This 2017 class that will sign in 2018 is going to be a nice haul as well. And some of them will sign this December too. That's going to be a great haul. And it clearly, with the fan enthusiasm and the player development that's happened both in spring ball and throughout fall camp, they're backing it up there. But to truly sink that putt and make good on that tee shot they just stuck within 5 feet, they got to go out there and have a season that really builds upon these expectations in the win column. And I think they can. I think this is potentially a 5+ win football team we're looking at, and wouldn't that be exciting if you're debating bowl eligibility as we head into the final month in November?
And what's so cool about, you talk about the recruiting class he has got in 2016 and what he's building for this year and next year, not to say that Mangino didn't do a great job in recruiting. He went out and found those two-star, those three-star, those diamonds in the rough and turned them into guys who went and won an Orange Bowl. Beatty is recruiting, I mean, higher caliber players with his ties to Texas, with Tony Hall's ties to the New Orleans area. And I'm really interested to see how that materializes. You've called this a transitional year, which I think is very appropriate because of the fact that we're excited about this year. Look at the youth on this team. What are there, five starters or five seniors on the two deep, three senior starters? Like,
right.
This isn't a thing where it's a window of opportunity is very short. Like, this is just the beginning of what David Beatty's hoping to accomplish at KU.
That may be what's most exciting, the fact that your nucleus is largely going to remain intact at the end of this season. Obviously, Dorrance is a guy that many project to possibly play well enough to be drafted after his junior year. But, it's really exciting to think what they could be if this year continues to ascend upward and then you bring most of them back next season. Obviously, so much can change week to week, let alone year to year, but it is an upward and onward type thing where you're expecting results now, but really projecting and extrapolating what it could be a year from now. And that's pretty cool that you can get behind those types of thoughts and realistically be starting to expect not just competing, but winning on a regular basis.
Talking to Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I had a friend ask me just last night, why is everybody so excited about this year? What's going to be different? What am I going to notice? And I said, I think the biggest thing that you're going to notice is this offense is going to start looking like a Big 12 offense. This is, you're going to have a system in place with an unbelievable offensive coordinator in Doug Meacham. And while they may not be, you know, setting any Big 12 records or leading the conference, you're going to see something on that side of the ball that we haven't seen really much of over the past decade.
Yeah, completely agree. He's injected a lot of energy and excitement into practice. All the guys that I talked to on Tuesday at the press conference that were on the offensive side of the ball echoed what a great fall camp it was for the first time under Coach Meacham. And he's got talent to work with. I mean, that's the thing. I'm sure when Coach Beatty was on the phone with him trying to convince him to come up here, he told him, hey, you know, we're going to have some skill position guys for you to work with. We're going to have hopefully a couple of quarterbacks that can duke it out and give you something to work with there. But until he got here and fully saw it for himself, I'm not sure he completely realized just how, I don't want to say full the cupboard was, but how well stocked the cupboard was. Because let's take a look at the receivers, for example. You know, Dalen Charlotte, your four-star, number 8 overall receiver in America coming out of high school. Right now, he's on the 2-line. And don't read too much into that, because in an offense like this, you're going to be shuffling receivers and pass-catching targets in and out a lot. Just because you're not out there for snaps 1 and 2 doesn't mean you won't be for snaps 3 and 4. But the fact that Jeremiah Booker and Steven Sims and some of these other guys at the inside receiver positions have earned starting nods, and you're bringing in a guy like that on the second wave, says a lot. Quan Hampton may have turned as many heads as anybody in terms of the newcomers, and everybody to a man calls out his name whenever they talk about breakthrough, impactful new skill position guys. And then there's Kerr Johnson, the junior college kid from California. They call him Kerr the Blur because he's just streaky fast and had 9-plus touchdowns of 50-plus yards throughout the preseason, where he just caught it and in space could not be brought down. So he's a guy you have to look for. I know you and David walked away so impressed with Jeremiah Booker.
Yeah.
And his approach to preparation, his commitment level, David Beatty said on Tuesday, is second to none on this team. If he can just be blessed with 12 games of health, he could be a breakthrough guy. I think Chase Harrell is a red zone target on this team that could catch 5 or 6 touchdowns for you this year.
Ben Johnson is one of those guys. David and I have talked about this. For this type of an offense, it's a luxury if you have a guy like Ben Johnson. If you don't have him, you're okay. But the fact that KU does have one of those guys,
oh yeah,
I'm excited to see that.
No doubt. And he's rededicated himself more so than ever in the last 12 months to make this swan song the best one possible for him. And so you've got plenty of options.
Ryan Shadler.
Oh, yeah.
How cool is that story,
by the way? There's a breakout coming in the slot from Shadler. I mean, he could be a guy that has multiple scores for you of long yardage because he was so elusive in the open field. And you're right. This time a year ago, to be shut down because of the intestinal surgery he had to have and a situation where he didn't let it, you know, make him down and out emotionally or you know, decide to pack up the tent. He just rededicates himself and comes back stronger than ever. And Coach Beatty really feels like he'll be a difference maker along with Tyler Patrick there in the slot. So I think, you know, Peyton Bender, Carter Stanley, they're going to have a wealth of options to throw to. And then the running backs look great too. You know, Keon Kenner's gone, but Khalil Herbert and Taylor Martin come back. And they're so excited about Dom Williams, a 4-star kid out of Texas that certainly has lived up to the 4-star billing. In talking with Tony Hull, the running backs coach, about 2 weeks ago, he mentioned his name first amongst the guys that were really turning heads. That doesn't mean he's the first guy to get a handoff on Saturday. They'll spread the ball around, but look for Dom Williams. And obviously we all know by now about Octavius Matthews and the heart condition that's going to end his career. That's devastating news for the young man and certainly a tough blow for the football program. But they already had a wealth of riches in that running back stable, and I think they'll be able to overcome it just fine.
He's Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Last year with the defense, you got to take the good with the bad. One of the best pass rushing units in the Big 12 with Dorrance Armstrong, Daniel Wise. Now Josh Ahambe is going to be at least starting the season opposite Dorrance Armstrong. You get Joe Denneen back, but there is a lack of experience across that secondary. Two new cornerbacks coming in Hassan defense and Shaquille Taylor and Lawrence Free State's own Bryce Tornaden going to be starting opposite Mike Lee at that safety spot. Is this sort of a situation where it's up to them to kind of hold up their end of the bargain, knowing the firepower that you're going to have up front on that defense?
Yeah, and if the firepower up front on that defense does their job, they won't have to hold the bargain for as long out there on an island defensively. So they do go hand in hand, and I think they realize that hey, you know what, we're blessed that there's going to be less time for opposing quarterbacks to throw, but we got to make sure it's not an easy, quick release decision because we're right there with our man when he breaks off the line. And so it'll be interesting to see how guys like Hassan Defense perform right away, because for all intents and purposes, he's been as advertised as well and has drawn rave reviews from Kenny Perry and everybody on that defensive staff. And man, Tornadin, his name just keeps getting brought up more and more too, and that's really exciting. A guy that I know you called his play-by-play, and what was I reading yesterday? He had almost 2,500 yards of total offense as a senior quarterback
at Free State.
And I called Cameron Tornadin's games. You called Bryce Tornadin's games. That family's been good to the folks on the north side of 15th Street, Bob Billings. But, yeah, I can't wait to watch the jump he's about to make, because all the coaches, including Coach Beatty, are quick to toss his name out on the short list. And you know, we just taped the TV interview with Coach Beatty the other day, and I know this time of year he's shy to single out individuals because, as he says, talking season is over. Now it's doing season, and he wants to make it about the team. But when I was asking him about what a difference a year makes for guys like Shadler and some others, Tornadin was one of the first names he tossed out as a guy that a year later is ready to thrive. And you put him next to Mike Lee, that's one heck of a pair of safeties. Can't wait to see what those guys do.
Simo coming into town this Saturday, 6 o'clock kickoff. What do you know about this team, and what are you looking to see? What are you watching out for on Saturday?
Well, the Redhawks, I think, are better than what the record indicated a year ago when they were 3-8. They had several losses of a touchdown or less that easily could have gone the other way. And for the first time in 6 years, they bring back their starting quarterback. The Hoskett kid, I think, has a good arm. He's got a top-five receiver in the Ohio Valley Conference to throw it to. And he himself was toward the top of the list in some of the passing statistics from a year ago in the Valley. Now, having said that, they're only picked 7th out of 9 teams in the Ohio Valley Conference, so it's not like this is the cream of the crop, tip of the top from that particular league.
Right.
But I do think when you finally have continuity at that all-important quarterback position for the first time in Coach Took's tenure and first time in 6 years, that's a great way to start. And you look at Chad Meredith defensively, he's a linebacker that, quite frankly, should be playing at the major conference level. You know, watching film with David Lawrence is about as fun as going clubbing with Nick Schwert. You know, you've got eye-popping going on with both. Nick looking at the ladies and David getting excited over big hits. But I was watching film with David on Tuesday of this Chad Meredith kid, and he was jumping out of his chair. He's like, dang, this guy is good. And so they've got some guys, and you expect to see that. I mean, a lot of times you'll see that for whatever reason. Guys can't cut it, whether it's in the classroom or maybe they were late bloomers and they wind up at that second level. And in this case, here's an FCS, Ohio Valley kid that I think belongs in a big-time conference. So look for Meredith. I believe he's number 7 when you see them break huddle on Saturday night. But they've got some talent, and obviously we all remember 2014, how close they made it in that ferocious comeback to lose just by 6 just 3 years ago. If that happens, I'll be really disappointed. I think this Kansas team has come leaps and bounds from that point in time, and with a schedule that ascends upwards in terms of degree of difficulty and what they're taking on challenge-wise, you want to win this one with some emphasis. You want to win this one in convincing fashion so that you've got great confidence in all three phases of the game heading into what David Lawrence calls the biggest game of the season, the Chippewas in week 2. And then if you are lucky enough and good enough to win that one, man, you could really have some momentum rolling
Absolutely.
Up to Ohio. So it's all important with that first step to get off to a good start and look good in your first stride of the season. Let's hope in all three phases Kansas does just that.
What kind of fan turnout are you expecting on Saturday? I mean, you've got buzz around the program.
Yeah.
You've got the Orange Bowl being honored. You've got the 6 o'clock kickoff, which I think makes a world of difference as well.
It does. You know, we were sitting around the table as a broadcast crew the other day, and this number came up. And one of my bosses, not at the athletic department, but one of my bosses in the broadcast room guessed 34,000. And I said, man, I'm thinking better than that.
Yeah,
you know,
too.
I'm thinking 37, 38. But who knows? It's tough to say. I would hope that when you've got 90% of the Orange Bowl roster coming back, which no matter what era of KU football you grew up in, this is the unprecedented high water mark in the history of the program. They'd been to one previous Orange Bowl. Well, they won this one. They went 12-1. They were 11-0. Cover of Sports Illustrated. They voted number 2 in some of the rankings and got one number 1 AP vote. How about that? You know, and so it was one of those situations where we never saw anything before and haven't seen anything since close to this. You got 90% of these guys coming back. Man, you can get a ticket anywhere right now of the remaining ones for a good price. Please come out. You don't need the play-by-play guy to ask for attendance. But my point is, for the sake of honoring those guys that set the bar so high, and then the sake of this next generation that I truly believe is on the cusp of leaping back into what we expect to see and having one of those 2003 type steps forward, come out, man. It's going to be a ton of fun. I mean, when else are you going to see
right. All
these Pro Bowlers in the house, like Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, Daryl Stuckey, a former Pro Bowler, he's going to be there, Mark Mangino, a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's
going to
be...
should be a good product on the field,
oh,
too,
my gosh,
know?
Absolutely. So it's going to be a who's who to see and be seen, and we hope you'll be there loud and proud on Saturday night.
We had this discussion yesterday on the show. Derek put the number right around what you said, about 38. I said, I'm thinking optimistic. Like, I think 40,000 like will show up. That's not my guess of like my over under. That's just what I think will happen, because when they haven't had 30,000 at a game since week two of the Beatty era, but we knew what he inherited. We had known how kind of futile it was right before that. The Charlie Weiss era, they were bringing in 40,000 consistently for home games. And if that's what you were doing in year number one of Charlie Weiss, I think that should be pretty reasonable to do in year number three of Beatty with what he's kind of accomplished and the buzz that he's created for his program.
And such momentum, you're right. And you'll come out, you'll see a different-looking stadium on the outside. If you haven't driven past the stadium in the last few weeks to see all the big picture mural type things they have in the old stone entryways, the arches, you've got now your all-time greats like Hadle and Sayers and Riggins.
So cool.
More present-day stars like Riesing and Meyer and Briscoe. And even... you know, I say present day with those guys. That was 10 years ago. They literally have a present day star in Lawrence Armstrong.
Right.
And you might be wondering, why would you put a current guy up there? Well, that's for recruiting. You want these 17-year-old kids to come in and see a face they recognize and a guy that they're trying to emulate right now. And so I love how they did it. So you're going to see some facelifts with that and the cabanas and all kinds of good stuff. And I really think it's going to be the place to be on Saturday night. So I hope we'll have 40,000 plus. And who knows? Maybe we're both selling this crowd short. Maybe it's
maybe I hope we're
farther
right.
north of that.
He's Brian Haney. He's the voice of the Jayhawks. Hear him on the call at 6 o'clock on Saturday, right here on KLWN. Thanks for the time, man.
Thank you, and thanks to my friends over here at Crystal Canine. Every day, I drop off my main man Griffey for doggy daycare. It is pet grooming, obedience training, all that right across from the radio station. Crystal Canine, Cedric and company do a terrific job. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you. All right, that's Brian Haney. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. 5 o'clock hour is here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Let's continue the Kansas football discussion, opening their season against SEMO on Saturday, as we welcome on KU beat writer for the LJ World, Benton Smith, onto the program. So when David Beatty comes out earlier this week, kind of staying true to what he said all offseason long and really the entirety of his tenure at KU, not going to reveal any information about who the starting quarterback is, but I've got to imagine the guys in that locker room, the guys in that quarterback competition have known at least for a little while who's going to start on Saturday, right?
Yeah, I think so too. I think Peyton Bender has kind of been the favorite for a long time now in that race. And I mean, obviously, if Carter Stanley has an injured hand that would kind of limit him in practices and, you know, maybe or may not even impact whether he's available on Saturday, obviously Peyton Bender is going to start this weekend. But I also think that Peyton Bender has quietly been leading that competition too. I think coaches and players went out of their way not to give any hints about who was in the lead. You know, you would ask a player or Doug Meacham or David Beatty about the competition, and you know, they would do their best to just give you a bland answer and kind of try to get you to get to another topic. But the more that you kind of tried to pick players' brains and ask a lot of questions about, you know, just how everything was working, I mean, I think you just heard enough good things about Peyton Bender, and you didn't hear negative things about Carter Stanley for sure, but you just got the sense that Bender was in the lead, and now he's a definitive starter for this season opener, even if they want to try to hide it from SEMO.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we've been assuming all along, right? You go and get a quarterback who's run the air raid system. It just would make sense for him to be that guy. I'm sure this is something that you've given some thought to, but what are your expectations for Peyton Bender, both how it's going to look seeing him out there running that air raid, and statistically, like, what kind of expectations do you have for him?
Well, I mean, I think he's he's finally the kind of guy that David Beatty needs in his air raid offense. I mean, you know, Montel Cozart was never that guy. Ryan Willis was never that guy. Carter Stanley showed as a redshirt freshman late last year that he had potential to kind of become that guy. And, you know, who knows, maybe he will still later this season or next year or down the line. But Peyton Bender, as you mentioned, I mean, this is an air raid quarterback through and through. And I think it helps that obviously that he learned at Washington State, spent 2 years there learning from Mike Leach, who's like the godfather of the air raid, basically, or one of the few upper echelon air raid coaches nationally. And he's just comfortable. He makes quick reads. That's what everybody always says. That's what you need out of an air raid quarterback, someone who gets the snap, surveys the field, and boom, makes a decision. He either sees someone open or he makes a smart decision and throws it away if everyone's covered. So I think those are the kind of things you're going to see out of Peyton Bender, not necessarily like massive arm strength and like throwing the ball 70 yards, that sort of thing, but just smart decisions time after time. And eventually that starts wearing out a defense, especially if they can play at a tempo like they want to.
And we saw last year them try to run the air raid, but the problem was the offense could never sustain drives. And a lot of the time it was because the quarterback was being asked to do everything. There was absolutely no running game. They just couldn't establish any sort of consistency on the ground. Like, how much of an emphasis do you think that's going to be? And do you expect to see improvements in the running game this year?
I do expect a better running game this year. And I think part of the reason that it was so poor last year was just the offensive line as a whole was not that good, you know. And whether you believe it or not, the offensive line from the player's perspective and the coach's perspective is much improved at this point. I mean, we're kind of like a week or two away from finding out how much improved they are. So I don't know how much they're going to get challenged against Emo. And things obviously get tougher from there on the schedule. But I think there will be more commitment to the running game because there should be an improved version of the offensive line. And I think that they've got personnel in the backfield that are potential playmakers with guys like Khalil Herbert, Taylor Martin, Dom Williams. I think that there's just more incentive to run the ball a little bit, as much as they will probably pass it more than they run it.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot for the first time. Who's going to lead KU in rushing yards this year?
I'm going with Khalil Herbert. I think that they're going to kind of mix it up pretty well, and it might be close, but I like Khalil Herbert. I think that he really showed some potential last year before he hurt his foot, and I think that, you know, he's got a year of experience behind him now, and as explosive as Don Williams might be, you know, he might have some of those freshman hurdles to kind of get in his way. And I think Don Williams is probably the long-term top running back of this group. But this year, I like Khalil Herbert.
Yeah, we could debate the merits of what it really means to be a first-string wide receiver in this offense because we know they're going to use a lot of guys. Like, it could be near 10 to 12 guys that are getting consistent reps. But at least for me, it was a little surprising to see that Daylon Charlotte wasn't on that list of ones when the depth chart was released earlier in the week. Did that surprise you at all?
Yeah, it definitely surprised me. I mean, he's a guy that they've talked up since he got on campus a year ago. And, you know, he was a guy that was at Alabama, and Nick Saban didn't want him to leave Alabama. So, I mean, that tells you that he's a talented wide receiver. And I think that maybe just in practices, they haven't quite seen him exert that 100% effort on every single rep. And I think they're trying to send him a message with that. But I also think he's receiving that message and that he's going to step his game up in practices and be ready. And even if he doesn't start on Saturday, I think he's going to go out there and make a really big impact in the passing game. We're going to see him make big plays Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about pretty much every position group on this offense, and I just had a friend ask me last night, and he said, what's this team really going to look like this year? And I said, I think for the first time in a long time, you're not going to laugh when you see this team play offense. Like, it may not be one of the better offenses in the Big 12, but it really does just seem like it's going to be a significant step than what we've seen the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there are some obvious factors that play into that. Number one being a quarterback in Peyton Bender that can get the job done, an improved offensive line, depth at wide receiver, and an offensive coordinator in Doug Meacham, who's really locked in and wants to, you know, prove that he can have his own offense after kind of being a co-coordinator at TCU. I mean, when you come to KU, you know that it's going to be a challenge. And I think he's kind of invigorated by that, and just the chance to prove that, you know, he can put a productive offense on the field at a program where the offense, as you mentioned, has kind of been unbearable to watch for years.
Talking to Benton Smith, KU Sports, Lawrence Journal World here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. All right, let's go to the defensive side of the ball. Josh Ahambe going to be starting at that DN spot opposite Dorrance Armstrong. That seemed to be kind of one of the more tighter races as far as guys really gunning for that with he and Isaiah Bean and others. What do you expect from Ahambe opposite Dorrance Armstrong, and how much pressure do you kind of expect to be on him knowing that there's going to be a lot of attention paid to Dorrance?
Well, I don't know. I think that that whole defensive line is just a confident group because of how impactful Dorrance is and because of how massive a presence that Daniel Wise is. So I think that everybody on that defensive line kind of feeds off of that. They love playing alongside Armstrong and Wise, and they trust that, you know, they're going to do their jobs even if they're facing double teams, and that's going to open things up for everybody else. So I don't even look at it as like a pressure situation for Ahambe. I think that that's just a confident group on the whole because of the supreme talent of Dorrance Armstrong and Daniel Wise.
Now, you look at that defensive line, it's clearly one of the strengths of the team. You move back to the linebacker core. Joe Dineen comes in, some Free State flavor there with both Dineen and Lonaker Jr. KU really struggled defending the run a year ago. Mm-hmm. Do you expect that to be a significant improvement this year?
I think that's been a pretty big focus of the offseason with this defense, and I think that's something that Clint Bowen has been stressing since the spring and will continue to stress. I mean, that's just what defensive coordinators do. They try to convince their players how important it is to stop the opponent's rushing game. And I think that they've spent enough time kind of harping on that, and, you know, guys are older and they understand assignments and gap responsibility and all those terms you like to hear coaches use. So I think that they'll be better at defending the run. How much better, I don't think we'll find out until really Big 12 play starts.
And talking about the Free State flavor on that defense, Bryce Tornaden named the starting safety. A lot of newcomers there in the secondary. It seems like there is going to be a ton of pressure on the secondary to kind of keep up with what the guys are doing up front. I remember last year there were so many opportunities where they're just harassing the quarterback. The Texas Tech game, I remember specifically, the quarterbacks are being chased all over the field by the pass rushers, and they would fling it up, and you'd think, oh my gosh, perfect opportunity for an interception, and it would go for a huge gain. There's even more youth in that secondary this year. Do you envision that they're going to be able to kind of hold up their end of the bargain on defense?
Yeah, that's kind of going to be the ultimate test for this defense, is how does the back end kind of live up to the expectations of the group as a whole? Because, you know, Armstrong, Wise, Dineen, those guys are clearly the leaders of the defense, and, you know, they're trustworthy guys. They're guys that coaches know are going to do their jobs and consistently do it well. So I think college football is kind of set up this way where you have the non-conference, and for a lot of teams, those first couple of games, you kind of ease into the season. So I think that's ideal for this KU group in the secondary, especially because, I mean, we know who Mike Lee is. We know what he's going to do. But like you said, Tornaden, he played a little bit last year, but he's just a sophomore. This is first year starting. And then on the corners, you got Shaquille Taylor and Hassan Defense, both guys who transferred in and have only been here since the spring, both guys that are confident. And I think Kenny Perry really likes both those guys' potential and their ability to really make plays in the secondary. So if you believe what their teammates and their coaches are saying, I think Hassan Defense and Shaquille Taylor might be the kind of guys that when a quarterback is under duress and has to kind of fling off a pass that isn't necessarily the best idea, they're the kind of guys that are going to go after the ball and try to make a big play.
David Beatty said earlier in the week that he just wants to see a clean game on Saturday. What about you? What are you going to be looking for from this team?
I'm just excited to see what the offense looks like. I mean, and I don't know. I think that with a season opener, you kind of also have to realize that this version that we see this week probably isn't the truest version of what the offense is going to be this year. Because, I mean, if you remember last year, they opened against Rhode Island and they put up, 50-some points or whatever, and everything looked perfect. But, you realize soon after the next week when Ohio came to Memorial Stadium and won, just exactly, you know, what big of a challenge was still in front of this team because the program's been just down for so long. So I think that I'm excited to see the air raid offense, see what Peyton Bender can do, kind of get a sense of where this offense might be headed for the rest of the year and see about its potential. But I think we'll see, not this weekend, but 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, just how good the offense can be.
We've got Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal World on with us here for just a couple more minutes. Before I let you go, I want to talk a little recruiting discussion with you because Devontae Jason, KU's biggest recruit, up for next year, five-star wide receiver out of New Orleans. He is a commit, but he last night released his list of his top seven schools. As somebody who covers this program, how do you interpret something like that?
I don't know. I think football recruiting is just like such this unique beast. I mean, just the whole scene. And if you are like a four-star or five-star guy, I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but I feel like this isn't that uncommon of a thing where guys are committed to one team and, you know, a number of months later you hear them say, or they put out on Twitter with some, you know, graphic with a bunch of logos, like, here are my top seven teams, here are my top 10 teams. You're like, oh, really? So I think it's just like, it's just like its own culture, really, the whole like big time high school football recruiting scene. So I'm not surprised when that happens. I'll say that much, but it also probably scares a lot of KU football fans,
right?
To see that LSU logo, that University of Miami logo next to Devontae Jason.
Benton, appreciate the time. Keep up the good work. We'll see you on Saturday, and we'll talk to you again next week, man. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thanks, Nick.
All right, that's Benton Smith. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I mean, I get why these kids do it. I understand why they want to make the most out of this recruitment process. It's going to be the only time for the rest of your life where literally every major coach in your field is going to be fawning over you. When you get to the NFL, it's that you're trying out for them. At this point, these schools are auditioning for this young man's services. So the fact that he's going to draw it out and get as much pub and get all the love that he can, I don't blame him for that, but there's no denying the fact that if you're a Kansas football fan and crossing your fingers that you're going to get him, it probably doesn't bode too well for you. Now, he did put KU at the top of his list, for whatever that means, but take as many visits as you want. Go to as many campuses, meet as many coaches as you possibly want to. I'd do the same thing, but when it comes time to make that final decision, he says he wants to sign early in December and get on campus. Let's just hope he stays true to his word. It's 20 after 5, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.